29. These and other observances must a Brahmana who dwells in the forest diligently practice. And in order to gain complete union with the Supreme Soul, he must study the various sacred texts contained in the Upanishads. So Upanishads is specifically the philosophy of the Veda. So the Upanishads become very important if one is trying to detach oneself from the material world. Because the other texts, they read the Vedic literature itself, the Samhita or the Brahmanas, then these are all dealing with how to be in the material world, how to engage in the material world. But the Upanishads are specifically meant for how to get one out of the material world. So the essence of this Upanishads we find in the Gita, therefore it's known as the Gita Upanishad, and in the Vedanta Sutra. So then the natural commentary of Vedanta Sutra is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So by the study of the Gita and the Bhagavatam, then this is very important for someone who wants to get oneself out of this material world. 30. As well as those rites and texts which have been practiced and studied by the sages and by Brahmana householders in order to increase their knowledge of Brahman and their austerity and in order to sanctify their bodies. So this means, and then any other scriptures that are recommended by the acharyas, like that. So these main ones, the essential, means the Bhagavatam, the Gita, these are essential literatures, than anything else that's recommended. And here it says to increase their knowledge of the Lord, to increase their austerity, and in order to sanctify themselves. So that in the devotional process, if one gains knowledge, and then by that knowledge, then one is able to detach oneself from the material world. It means in other words, two things have to be going on at once. We have to be connecting ourselves to the Lord, and we have to be detaching ourselves from the material world. So both of these require the process of hearing, of knowledge, for the conditioned soul. So then by hearing about the Lord, we become attracted to the Lord, and by hearing about the qualities of the material world, we become detached from them. So both have to be going on simultaneously. 31. Or let him walk fully determined and going straight on in a northeasterly direction, subsisting on water and air until his body sinks to rest. Then, so he just continues to study like this and gets realized, or he also has the opportunity to what is called Mahaprasthan, where they stop eating, and then they just walk in the northeasterly direction. And then until that time, then they leave the body. Yeah, because that's the tradition of the Brahmins is that if for some reason they want to leave, then they do so by fasting. They don't use generally any other methods. Fasting is the recommended path. A Brahmin, having gotten rid of his body by one of those modes practiced by the great sages, is exalted in the world of Brahman, free from sorrow and fear. But having thus passed the third part of a man's natural term of life in the forest, he may live as an ascetic during the fourth part of his existence, after abandoning all attachment to worldly objects. So here's given an alternative, is that one can study until one has the knowledge of detachment in that, and then one can, like Dhritarashtra or that, then leave his body at that time. Or then it's saying here, then in after coming to that platform, then one can take sannyas. 34.
Does that mean that
sannyas
is only taken when one is on that level?
Generally, it means that there should be some good understanding of knowledge, austerity. This is mentioned here, to increase their knowledge, austerity, and in order to sanctify their bodies. Because the body becomes unsanctified when there's lack of knowledge. And when there's lack of knowledge, there's lack of austerity. And then we have ideas that the body has particular uses that it's not meant for. And we endeavor in all kinds of activities that we shouldn't endeavor in. You know? So, therefore, the whole concept is that one should be steady in these things. In other words, at the end of the Grihastha Ashram, then the idea is that one should then review back what has been experienced, what has been learned. Because before marriage, then study was there, practice was there. Then from that practice, then one has an understanding of what is the Grihastasham, who we are, what is our attachments, and then how to deal with those attachments. Because that's the whole point is that Krishna's mentioning in the Gita that one cannot give up work, one cannot give up the engagement of the senses. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in these treatises given in Bhakti Loka, then he mentions it's an illusion to think that one will stop using the senses. Because the body is made of senses, so it's acting. It's going on. So the point is one has to take, and according to one's position, one's nature, one has to engage those in the Lord's service. Then they actually become purified. So the thing is you have to find which situation for engaging the senses then fits one's nature and level of detachment and understanding. So now if one finds that after studying the situation that there is still strong emotional attachments and these things are there, then the household life then will give the opportunity to engage those sentiments in the Lord's service and then purify them. But that only becomes service really solidly when one knows what one's doing, when one actually understands what is the process, what is the Grihastha Ashram. Because animal life means without training they just do. Human life means with training they do. So that makes a major difference between the two. Is that the human needs to be trained. What is the human values? What is the proper way of dealing? And like this, you know, it's just like you see. Some parents are very kind with the children. Some parents are very rough with the children. So the roughness will come when they keep themselves at the center. And to expand their own pleasures, then the children are there to expand their own self-centeredness. When that doesn't work, then they get frustrated. And then, you know, rough dealings are there, or lack of shelter, or lack of security, like this. So then it's that is somebody going into the ashram without knowledge. Because with knowledge, then they understand that it's not that. Is that in the whole purpose is to engage the senses, engage the emotions in the Lord's service. So one of the aspects that naturally comes up in the Grihasthasam is children. So one has to understand whose children they are. What is our business as to raise them, that actually the parents are the first gurus, so they must train, they must deliver them from death. So you deliver them from death by taking care, by training them in Krishna consciousness, by sheltering them, by making them feel, you know, wanted. Like this, then they start to identify properly with the devotional path, the devotees. But if they don't experience that, then they become self-centered themselves. So if the parents are centered on Krishna, the children will become like that. So with knowledge, one goes into it, but it's still its theory. That's the difference. So someone who understands the ashram and comes to the realizations that one would gain from going through the ashram, one doesn't need to go through the ashram. That's called the naistika of brahmachari. But one who understands the ashram but doesn't gain the realizations goes through the ashram and gains those realizations. So then the idea is then the Vanaprastha Ashram, which this is talking about now, is for the purpose of now again taking up that study, deepening and going back and what one studied before, now studying again. And now looking at it, you know, what one has learned from it. It means before one knows that these are the things that will come up in the Grihastha Ashram. These are the subtleties one has to watch out for. The pitfalls that will be there. And that one, how one may forget to use the senses in the Lord's service, and one may use them for oneself. So in other words, how to not be a Grihamedi, how to be a Grihastha. Then, when one comes to the Vanaprastha Ashram, then one can, again, go through that and see what those were. Yes, I experienced those things. What was the result of that? What's one's understanding, one's realizations of that? Then, in that position, one becomes very strong. So the knowledge becomes strong. So then we become detached from the material world. And then from that we're able to be more austere. and then the body becomes purified. And because we're studying the devotional scriptures, the actual, it's mentioned here, the Upanishads, so the essence of the literature, the Siddhanta, so that means our relationship with the Lord. Does that make sense? So then that other side, one's cultivating that attraction to the Lord. So both have to be done here.
In the Isha Upanishad, the verse is...
Speak louder.
In the Isha Upanishad, there's the verse, Vidyamsha, Avidyamsha.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that connected to
Yeah. Vidyamcha, Vidyamcha, Vidyamcha. So the how do you say? Vidya means knowledge, what is, who we are, who's the Lord, what's our relationship, what's the material world, how to engage that in the Lord's service. Avidya means how to avoid not using it in the Lord's service. Because avidya means anything that's not engaged in the Lord's service. That's the simplest definition. Vidya means what is engaged in the Lord's service, like that, whether it's material or spiritual. Then within vidya, there's two parts. There's transcendental, which is paravidya, and then there's aparavidya, which means it's material knowledge that's been dovetailed. Like we may know mechanics. So if we don't use it in Krishna's service, it's avidya, even though it's a branch of knowledge, because it doesn't bring you any closer to the Lord. Now, if we use that in the Lord's service, that's called aparavidya. And then study of the philosophy, that's paravidya. So therefore, it becomes connected, the avidya becomes connected to the Lord when we see it in relationship to the philosophy. That's the important thing, because one can take anything from anywhere, but one has to be able to make that connection. If you find something that's useful and practical, but you can't connect it to the Lord, then there's still the chance of it running the risk of becoming avidya at some point. One may be engaging it, and it's being engaged, but because one doesn't technically know how it engages, one can become distracted. You know, many times we see. So and they become proud of their knowledge. It's practical, it's worldly, people accept it. You know, worldly knowledge is accepted. They, you know, it'll be thought that the philosophy is not so much. So then it'll be thought that, you know, one may be more well situated like that, and one can get distracted by this. So the process of knowledge is that one may gain from any place, but then one has to be able to connect that back through the transcendental scriptures back to the Lord, because there's a connection for everything in the material world is connected to the Lord. It's just a matter of understanding how that connects, you know, how to use it in the Lord's service. Like that. You understand? Like you have this mat. This mat is material. But it's still, it's made of Krishna's energy. So it has some purpose, you know, something in there. Now if I just think I'm putting on the ground because I don't want to get my cloth dirty. So that's one thing. But then why don't we want to get the cloth dirty? You know, it's just, well, I don't want to look bad. So we still haven't connected it yet. It may be clean, it may be more refined. We haven't connected it yet. But as soon as this thing, well, I don't want to get the cloth dirty because then it won't look proper for the service. Or we understand, well, mats are put down because then one has to respect the devotees, and one of the things of respect is giving a seat. You know, and then Krishna expects us, you know, so even that's pious. But then it's a matter of you're respecting the devotees because that's part of the process in the Pancharatra, in the Bhagavat, in the Vedic. One has to respect qualified persons. Like that, because the Lord is always associating with, you know, eternally with unlimited qualified persons, so we have to learn to respect them and work with them, you know, like that. Then it becomes completely connected. Then the mat becomes aparavidya. But if not, it's just avidya. It's a thing, it's a very subtle thing. So that is applying here in the grihastha ashram, is that subtle it is between the grihastha and the grihamedi. It's just that subtle. You see it in Krishna's service. These are Krishna's children. We have to train them properly in the you know, the philosophy and morals of Krishna consciousness, so that they'll grow up to be proper members of the Krishna consciousness and proper human beings. You know, and this is what Prabhupada desired, Lord Chaitanya desired, so many of the acharyas. Then that's grihastha. But if it's just, you know, we have our kids and, you know, it's very nice to be with them, and, you know, you don't understand what it's like, and, you know, and all this, unless you have children, you can't understand all these things. This is grihamedi. Because they haven't connected it to the Lord. like that. It means the reason for it is their own emotional needs and desires, self-centered. Well, if you do the other one, the emotions are automatically there. When you have the higher, the lower is automatically there. But when you have the lower, the higher is not there. That's why the Bhagavatam gives so much importance on these so many chapters just discussing these things. Because it's understood, the devotee knows that you're supposed to engage in Krishna's service. And everything's for Krishna. But the problem is in the technique of applying it, it's very vast. You know, it's very vast, dealing with all these different situations and ashrams and the services. So the Bhagavatam therefore points out all these different aspects, how one can engage in the service without and avoid the pitfalls. So therefore, so many stories are there, so many details are there, and interactions are there, just so that the devotee understands how to do and not do. Like that. So the philosophy is given. You know, the theory is given, and also practical example. So by the Vanaprastha studying these things very deeply, then it becomes very much, the realization becomes much deeper. And they may have it by just going through it, but it's also, one of the points is when you get to that position, one is supposed to teach. The Vanaprastha sannyas, the idea is that they help others, yes. See, there's the knowing that it's a problem, and then there's realizing it's a problem. So knowing it's a problem, then one can at least remain brahmachari for some time, and study and deepen one's, deepen one's knowledge, one's character, one's devotional attitude, and all these good qualities that are necessary in devotional life. But simply understanding is not enough to remain brahmachari. It means there must be realization. So that realization can either be gotten by hearing, by seeing, or by experiencing. So the brahmachari really only has the first two to go on. You know, unless they're first generation and they've already been through the mill, that's another thing. But if not, they only have what they've heard from the scriptures and others and what they see in the community around us. Like that, the way Prabhupada's kind of organized it, the brahmacharis nowadays, before they only got to hear. Like that, but nowadays they also get to see. So it gives a little bit more, on that side, it gives a little more strength. At the same time, as for those who aren't as strong, then it also can invite interest also. It works both ways. The training of a nice deacon and the training of Upakurvana is actually the same. But both will get different understandings from it. It means depth. One will understand, but not realize. Because realizes means one doesn't want to go in because one, it's just, there's no emotional need on their part to gain out of it. Plus they see that the time could be used in a better way for them in their own nature. So that will be rare. That will definitely be rare. Those who understand then should train themselves up to the point where they feel that they've gained their proper training and everything enough where now they can go into the grihastha life and be able to concentrate on that. Because one's still trying to seriously do so much training and study and not practical service, it's very difficult to run a grihastha ashram. Someone was asking a question? Or? Yeah. Did we finish your question, Mataji? Or we were halfway through it? Or? Oh, yeah, yeah. See, it's basically, the whole point is, there's the external reasons. Is that running? The external reasons of the Varnashram, and then the actual reasons of the Varnashram. The external is that people are attached to the material world. So since they're going to be attached to the material world, then they should deal with the material world at least according to how Krishna says it should be dealt with. But their whole purpose is they want to deal with the material world, and they want to get whatever they want out of it, or they have their idea how to get out of the material world, but without really recognizing the Lord. In either case, the Lord's not being recognized. So Daivavarnashram means that one recognizes the Lord and recognizes our relationship with Him. And we're also, we recognize our conditioned nature. And so in recognizing that, then we see how to engage that in Krishna's service. And so that takes training, and that's a science. Many times it's thought, well, you know, the brahmacharis are all going to get married anyway, so why bother with the show? But the actual point is if you don't go through the training, then they won't, then the grihastha life will be a show. Like that. And then their sannyas, everything will be a show. Yeah, it won't work. Because they need to be trained, because unless they have some knowledge, some austerity, some cleanliness, some respect for authority, some good service attitude, they can't be successful as a grihastha. So that's gained as a brahmachari. So even one knows, okay, I'm going to get married, but then one should dedicate a certain amount of time to get serious, to get trained, to get mature, so one can actually be a good grihastha. So the idea is that they're not going to make it and just, you know, don't bother with it. That's basically, in the Vedic tradition, that's the Shudra training. It means that one doesn't actually go through brahmachari ashram. Well, for the Dvijas, then one always goes through the brahmachari ashram. Then one will be, you know, a good quality grihastha. And if you don't have that training before, it's very difficult to get out like that. Because you tend to fall back on your previous knowledge, your previous experience. And if one hasn't had an experience of being detached, at least to some degree, it's hard to fall back on that like that. Though one can by knowledge, but it just makes it a lot easier and a lot generally quicker to come to that understanding or that determination if one's already gone through that experience. So it may have been many years before, you know, 15, 20 years before. But then one always remembers what was the good aspects. Because if you look back, generally you always remember the good, you forget the bad. You know, so the thing is whatever it was they didn't appreciate in the brahmachari ashram, they'll forget that, and they'll just remember what was nice about it. And so then from the grihastha, it makes it easier to go into vanaprastha, because then one can feel, yes, I can be a little bit more detached, I can do more service, study more, and, you know, I'll still live, you know, like that. So it's just the next natural step. So understanding is not enough. That's the first step. When you understand, that's a first-class brahmachari. As Prabhupada says, that first-class brahmachari makes a good first-class grihastha. So first-class brahmachari actually understands that the grihastha ashram is not, how you say, something unique. But they understand that this is the method, how I'm going to get out. So that's the daivavarnashram, is that one is not going through the varnas and ashrams because of some, you know, euphoria. One is going through it out of duty. One knows that this is what I have to take. Just like you have a cold and you have some medicine. It's not that you're in ecstasy and rolling on the ground that you have this cold medicine to take. But you know, if I don't take the cold medicine, then I'm not going to get out of this material world. Jai Ho Maharaj. Something more or just...
Hari Bol Maharaj.
Okay, Hari Bol. Okay, thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Sometimes I give an example.
Huh.
That people say, oh, brahmachari is going to get married anyway, you should just get married straight away.
Yeah.
And I say, well, you're going to die one day anyway.
Might as well die.
But we don't, because we have to be trained. So that when we die, we can pass the examination and go back
to die. That's very nice. That's a good point. You heard? He was saying that sometimes it's very commonly said, well, brahmacharis are going to get married anyway, so why bother? So they might as well just, you know, get married now. So then he gives the example of, well, you're going to die, and everybody's going to die anyway also, so you might as well die now. No, but you have to train for it. So to be successful at the time of death, you have to train. So to be successful for marriage, then one has to train. you know. And for all these, the whole idea is this: the Vedic system is its training, because it's a culture, and we have to learn the higher values of the culture, and what is actually behind them. So it's a totally different approach, you know. It's just like, let us say you have a brahmachari, and it's understood he should be married. But now, if he doesn't train and become fixed in his devotional service and his activities and all that, and his understanding of what he's going to go through, he's not going to be a good grihastha. So it's actually a disservice on the part of those who just say, ah, it doesn't matter, just get married. You know, this is the example of the, you know, it's a disservice. It means that they should be the ones saying, oh, so you've decided to get married, so make sure that you've trained nicely, you know. Because they would be able to tell that, you know, either as grihasthas or other senior members of the community, that yes, it's a great responsibility. If one is not responsible, it's not going to be mean successful. Successful means one goes through and one does one's duty. The relationships in the family work at a pleasant level of cooperation. And because of performing those duties, then the emotional, you know, desires are fulfilled. But at the same time, as by knowledge, you know they'll never be fully fulfilled. They can't be in the material world. So one knows that it gets as good as it can, like that. You know, a few moments will be a little better, a few moments a little less. But at least it's a platform of how you say. You know, just steady, proper activity and proper exchange. The whole idea is human life is, it's, the ecstasy is not in varnashram, which means it's not anything in eating, sleeping, mating, defending, any of these activities. Position, you know, or distinction, adoration, the grihastha ashram, security, money, facility, it's not in any of these. It's actually only in devotional service, like that. In the pure devotional activities, hearing the holy, chanting the holy names, associating with devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, living in the Dham, these actually give what you're actually looking for. But since we don't have that taste, we think the taste is in something else. So then find that taste, but by doing it for Krishna. Right? How, means if you engage in Krishna's service according to Krishna's directions, then Krishna will be there. But if we don't, niyamagraha, we just reject the rules and whimsically act, how will Krishna be there in the activity? It means he'll be there because he's all the dead matter, he's in there. I mean, it's him. But that's all we're going to see. And then we're going to be attracted by the dead matter. We won't see Krishna inside the dead matter. Like that. So by performing that, it appears that it's boring. But that's only boring for those in the mode of passion, you know, or ignorance, like this, when there's a lack of knowledge. Because duty gives a very deep exchange between personalities. It's very deep. But it doesn't have the immediate mode of passion, euphoria this moment, and complete insanity the next. You know, it doesn't give that roller coaster ride effect, so that one feels that something's really happening. It's just very steady, dependable, goes on. You know, husband knows the wife's there, wife knows the husband there, they know the children are there, the children know that they're there, they know that their senior persons are there, they know that they're there to help the community. It means it's very. So one may think it's very plain and ordinary, but it should be in these kind of things, you know. It's just like, one has other things to do, more important, like to put your energy into chanting and serving. All these other things should go peacefully. Because otherwise, if the affairs at the home don't go peacefully, then one spends an over amount of time with them. You know, if relationships in the family are going nicely, just in a short amount of time, the exchange is very deep. But then if that isn't done properly, then the exchange is not deep, and one will spend hours and days and weeks and months and years trying to get something out of it and talking so much and this one and that one and reading this book and reading that book, and it still doesn't get any, even just any mundane substance out of it. And then there's a problem. So all that time could have been done in Krishna's service if you just follow the duties nicely. And then whatever little bit of time is there, but that time will have given, that is, duty is quality time. Anything else is not quality time. Duty is actual quality time. Okay. So then, that is the teaching of the Vedic culture. So unfortunately, it's not so much the teaching of the modern culture. It's definitely not the teaching of the consumerist culture. Not at all. Because if everything's okay, then you won't go out of your way to overly work hard to get more money to buy all the products that they want you to buy. So they have to create a sense of urgency and sense of stimulation, that unless you get this, then what's the use? But you see that lifestyle is the duality becomes very extreme. Something's very good or very bad, you know, and there's no in between. And we see that if devotees can't get out of this themselves, this conditioning, then they suffer from the same problems. Because just the day-to-day, you know, just plodding along, that's actually good. If that happens, that's good. But without understanding the system, then many times one gets caught up in the aberrations that are there, that are just natural. You know, like if a mother starts pulling her hair out because a small child cries all the time and wets the diapers, she's got problems. But she understands it's just the way it is, and then in that, then there's relationship, then it works very nicely. So it's just one understands, that's the point. If the brahmachari understands that these problems are there when he goes into the grihastha life, then there'll be no surprises. It's understood it's going to be like that. You know, kids are going to be crazy sometimes, wife's going to be crazy sometimes, he's going to be crazy sometimes. Everybody else is going to be crazy sometimes. That's just the way it is. Then he just knows how to deal with those as they come. You know, he just knows how to deal. Like, you know, you see all these examples, like wife goes crazy, you know, with Lord Shiva with Sati. He explains to her, he does what he's supposed to do. Then she's very mental, very caught up between what is right and following instructions of her husband and just her own material family attachments. And, you know, festival means something will be happening, some passion, some glitzy, some fancy. All the girls get to wear their fancy clothes and sit around and watch this and that, and all the big demigods come and show up, and, you know, it's a happening. So she wants to go. But at the same time, his husband's saying no, she knows it's not good, but that thing with the emotion is mentioned, she would like go in and out of the room like you know, just being blown by the wind. You know, she would just come in, oh, I should do this, but then her mind takes her out, and then she comes back in, like that. So then, and then she decides to go. So then, okay, Shiva, he's done his part. She's going. But he doesn't just left it, crazy lady, like that. He goes and follows, because the point is she is his wife. And even though she may be nuts at the moment, it's his business to take care. So he follows behind, but at some distance to give her space. You know, but in this, because you're dealing with big timers and they have yogic cities, she leaves her body, this and that. Generally, you won't have to worry about that in present day situations like that. You know, but otherwise, you know, otherwise, then you know, these things are shown. You know, many times you'll be saying, well, you know, that's it's not, you know, Krishna consciousness not practical, Vedic, the Varnashram's not practical, or Bhagavatam's not practical. I mean, what more practical thing is that than that? And he's just peacefully waiting. And then when she's finished all that up and then takes birth again now as the daughter of the Himalayas, you know, as Parvati, then he's there waiting. And then when she comes back, then goes on. But she learns from that. That's also a point, is that he's on that side, is, you know, self-control. But you can't do that unless one has been trained as a good brahmachari. How does he just speak what the Shastra says? This is the experience. This is what he's learned from his authorities. And stick to that and not be wavered by by all the how you say, the disturbances of the wise mind. He has the controlled senses that he can just very peacefully and nicely deal and be patient like that. You know, unless there's that cleanliness, how there'll be the cleanliness at heart that he will just be thinking of the wife's welfare and not worried, well, if I get on her case too much, then, you know, maybe there'll be no sense gratification later. So the cleanliness has to be there. Respect for authority. This is what Krishna says, is what the authorities say, this is what the shastras say, is what must be done. So then you can behave like that. But if one didn't go through any brahmachari training, it would be very difficult. Therefore, it's recommended that has to happen. That if one wants to be a guru, he can't be a good grihastha unless one has been through. Or if one finds oneself, you know, which is not uncommon, that one either joined as a grihastha or, you know, before understanding this. But then as a grihastha, one has to try to study these things and understand these things. Like that. Both husband and wife. Because it's both of them have to work together on this. Oh, thank you. Pretty kind of you. So both have to work on it. That's why it's said, and time again, it goes through here, in the Mana Samhita, that it's there must be equality in the mentality of the husband and wife, because then they both think the same way, they both have the same values, so then they both want to follow to that level that they can both follow. Because if there's not, if it's uneven, then there's disturbance. Right? No, generally, I mean, except from the as devotees, generally, no one is giving up the marriage because, you know, they don't think their wife is beautiful or the husband is very handsome. You know, that's generally not the thing. It's difference in values, difference in personality. The difference is so great. There's always going to be some difference because every living entity is individual. But it's unworkable difference. And so in the Vedic literature, therefore, even going into the marriage is very sober. That one goes into it looking at that nature, seeing if there's going to be able to work together, especially on points of how you're going to deal. I mean, how do you say? One finds oneself in a situation how one's going to that you're going to have the same spiritual value. So therefore, then one can, you know, each give one's opinion on what's the best way to accomplish it. But at least if the value is the same, then there's a commonality there. Then there's some meaning to husband and wife working together. If the values are different, where's the commonality? So then it becomes very esoteric that one can say that this is actually a couple. You know? And then the emotional needs won't be taken care of. And that was the whole purpose of the Grihastha Ashram, is that there were some emotional attachments, and you're supposed to engage those attachments in Krishna's service so that you're freed from them. So now there's no forum for it. So then one is frustrated. And then this then leads to the marriage becoming, you know, what's the modern term? Unviable? Is that politically correct? Mm-hmm. So that's the main thing there. So that's why that study must be there. And then of those brahmacharis who understand, then by performing this service in the ashram and all the menial service and the study and the preaching and all that, then if they come to the platform of realization, then they can avoid it, because the whole point is the living entity wants to get themselves to that point. Whether you do it today or tomorrow doesn't matter. So if someone has done it today, then that's glorious. And then the Upakurvana Brahmachari will do it, you know, after whatever it is, 10, 15, 20, you know, years. But they're trying to get to the same place. It's the same purpose. The purpose of the Naistika Brahmachari and the purpose of the Grihastha are exactly the same. It's just that one has learned by hearing and one has learned by experiencing. That's all.
And the other may have experienced in the previous life.
Yes. The others, generally the understanding is they've experienced in previous life. Someone who can be Naistika this life has already gone through proper Grihastha life in a last life. So So that should be respected also. So one may say, well, they don't know this and that. No, they know. That's why they've done it. If someone can maintain the brahmacharya, they actually know. They know what the grihastha is supposed to do. They know and realize what the grihastha is trying to realize. But someone who only understands, then he's actually junior to the grihastha. Because then the grihastha has actually gone into the practical application. It means learning the theory is the first step, then applying it's the second step. So the grihastha is already doing that, so they're ahead. So therefore the grihastha is considered senior to the brahmachari. Because they're applying it, they're taking that responsibility. They're now doing what they've learned. So that's always the next step. Then after that, then they'll teach others. Then they'll teach others when they come to the vanaprastha sannyas stage. Then they can give that advice and teach others in the community. Yes?
I'm just on the point of seniority between brahmacharis and grihasthas. I remember reading something interesting in Purujan Prabhu's book, where he said when they did the first Vyasa Puja, Prabhupada had the sannyasis, he had the most senior person do the Guru Puja Arati. And then the sannyasis would offer flowers. And then the grihasthas would offer flowers together, husband and wife together. And then the brahmacharis would go last. It's interesting.
No, because the brahmacharis are the youngest. They're the children. They're the children in the community. But that has to be trained like that. That has to be trained in that way. But there you'll notice when the grihasthas is coming, they're coming as couples. Like that, because that's the system. If you really want to follow the Vedic system, that puts the grihasthas in front of the brahmacharis. But it also puts husband and wife together. Wife will never approach on her own. It just won't happen. Like that. So then it's means goes both ways. That's the thing. But that's the actual proper. Is you have whoever is the senior most, then that are just like devotionally or whatever it is by positions, all those like exceptional monks of who's there, who are like specific. You know what I'm saying? Specific. Then you go to the general seniority. Like sannyas as a generality is there, but then from amongst them you may have someone senior, someone who's not, who's very senior, like that, just by position, or you know, like that, like you may have a GBC man present, or like this. So they may be kind of at that. Then your general sannyasis, then you would have your, you know, generally your senior grihasthas, and then the newer grihasthas, then the brahmacharis, like that. That would be the normal way of going through the thing. But then one has to understand the moods, what's going on, and why it's like that. See, the ordinary varnashram, one just understands the externals of it. With the daiva varnashram, you actually understand what is going on in the process. You know, what are the relationships? You know, like that. What are the relationships? That's funny. Yes, when the jackals go, then these water birds, and they start making noise. Like that. It's funny.
Great. Like in the middle of the
yeah, like out in the middle of the jungle, yeah. These ones especially, they're like something straight out of Africa.
Yeah.
These birds.
Yeah.
Shri. Anything more on this, or we go on to the next? What time is it now?
Maybe 6:30.
Okay.
another argument is that devotees are joining quite late in their life, so therefore they're encouraged to, like, you should marry quickly, because otherwise you'll be marrying very late and it'll be unhealthy. So it seems to be a balance there between getting the training and...
Yeah, it means some time has to be given to training. Otherwise, maybe they come late, they'll get married late, but they'll still be getting married later. Because those who haven't gone through the training nicely, you still see them at 50 years old getting married again. You know? So, better to spend a few years in nice training so that one can do it once nicely. It means the point is ultimately, you want to get the result. But the ideal... And, you know, the least annoying is to do it once, one has to go through many, many times. It's not recommended because it just is, it's emotionally just too disturbing. And then when one finally gets it together, then it's already the time that one should be doing following these teachings that we're talking about now with the Vanaprast. You know, the whole idea is that you're from your mid-40s on, it's kind of like that's the time for thinking of these, this next level. Well, it may still be grihastha, but it's kind of like one starts to make the plans and how to wind down the whole ashram and wind down the, you know, so much, you know, generating of funds and facility and all that, and start to move towards simpler living, more study, you know, going to holy places, associating with devotees. That's supposed to happen then. But if one hasn't, because of not knowing, you know, either one or both parties not being trained, then you get the situation at that age. And because the point is when you hit that age, you start to look at things start at least in a certain way, have the desire to see things in a very realistic way. What have I gotten? Like that. So if one is not trained, then one has a tendency to think, well, what have I gotten? And one sees one didn't get a whole lot. So one has a desire still to get. So then again, they're going for another marriage. But the point is because from lack of training, you don't know what it is you're looking for anyway, or how to get it. So, you know, maybe after many times one starts to learn, but it's why waste the time and disturb so many people? Because for the whole idea is, as a person, as an individual, needs to fulfill those desires. But to fulfill their desires, they should disturb as few people as possible. You know? So if marriages break up, it does disturb the husband and wife, it disturbs the children. And many times it disturbs the children worse than the adults, because the children are second generation. So for them, Krishna consciousness is the culture. So they've heard how it's supposed to go, and they have an idea this is what it should be. Well, the first generation, you know, before becoming a devotee, they may have already been through, you know, 20, 30, or hundreds of marriages, you know, like that. Maybe not legally, but just by the Gandharva rites, mutual consent. So to them, you know, another one or two doesn't mean anything, but they don't realize what they're doing to the children. Mm. You know, the children get very messed up, you know, when they, you know, suddenly wake up one day and they got new mommies and new daddies. You know, it's kind of like, for them, it's not normal for them. They don't say much because they're kids, but you see by their activity how they just become strange. Mm. They become, you know, just very, they don't want to get involved and get very, very self-centered.
Introverted,
you know, self-centered. Because they get introverted, then they got to cut a tough profile outside to kind of like balance for that. So then they end up just going through the same kind of problems that the parents went through as first generation. So it's one has to very much think of the children. Very much think of the children. That's the whole point of the Grihastha Ashram. Is that so many of the rules are there for the children's sake. The parents may think, well, I don't really like this, but like it or not, it's for the benefit of the children. And so if one doesn't like many of the rules, like relations between husband and wife, then one can avoid them, but then one should avoid children. Because most of those many of them are for the benefit of the child, you know. Like one doesn't like planning conception, that's for the benefit of the child, you know. That they will be coming, means a purified person will get an opportunity to come, like that. And if one doesn't, better don't have children, like that. You know, it's like it's not uncommon in the Western world that, you know, you have children who are, you know, even told that they weren't planned, you know, they weren't expected, you know, they weren't really planning to have a child. But so you can imagine what that does to the kid's head. Maybe not externally, you know, consciously, but unconsciously, it totally destroys his whole platform of emotional relationship and support and shelter with the parents. I mean, absolutely, with that one statement, which is not, and many times it comes from the mother, that's the even best part, absolutely destroys the whole underlying thing. You know? But it's a simple thing, very simple. But it's not understood that what it does to the kid. You know? And you won't notice it till later. You won't notice it at the time. It won't be understood at the time. But it'll be understood later. Okay. Are there any other questions on this vanaprastha? Because from now it goes into the ascetic. Yes.
What is this training as a brahmacharya mainly consist of?
Means the main principles are those that I mentioned: proper understanding and practice of cleanliness, and then how you say austerity, meaning just. Means our Krishna conscious austerity, following the sadhana like that, developing the sadhana properly, then studying the scriptures so one actually has a knowledge of the philosophy, then developing proper respect for authority like that. That's very important, because if one can't respect authority, how one will respect equals like that. And then service, yeah. One has to have that, perform menial service. So what it is that Prabhupada talks about as Gurukul training, that is the training that one needs if one wants to be a high caliber grihastha, or just have it go very smoothly for him. Is that one needs that kind of training. There must be that good control of the senses and knowledge and respect and service attitude and cleanliness. Then one finds that all those are applied in the grihastha ashram. Now the methods of that are, doing practical menial service, going out, begging they would do. So for us that means going out, doing varieties of preaching and these activities, because they create humility like that. Then respect of authority, one always has one's authorities, one has to be able to work under those authorities and work with them and develop that bonding of respect, and that if one can't respect authorities, then it will be very difficult as a grihastha, because then there's a chance that one will have very terrible children, because if you can't respect authority, your children won't respect you, and from the children they'll gain from the parents their lack of respect for authority. So right there, the father is supposed to be the next in line above the mother. So that already that authority structure will have no meaning. So that gets broken. So then the whole concept of discipline in the family is lost. So even in the house it'll be terrible. One can't sit around the house and talk about the senior members of the community or movement in a bad light in front of the children and expect that one's going to train and grow up very nice, wonderful, pleasant, dutiful and submissive children. It doesn't happen like that. So these things are all they're very basic, but they're very important. So that whole brahmachari training, learning that whatever he gets belongs to the Lord, be dependent upon the Lord for his sustenance. Then as a grihastha, then one will do one's duty, whatever comes, one will see that's what the Lord is sending and be able to live off of that. So then a cleanliness that if he can't be clean, then how he's going to see that the standards in the house, everything is clean and that. And if you can't, outside can't be clean, it's very hard to make inside clean. General thing is you're starting from the outside in, is you keep the body clean, so then it's easier to keep the consciousness clean like that. So then, and the surroundings clean means it's easy to keep the body clean, it's easy to keep the consciousness clean, like this. And the knowledge without it, then without knowledge, it'll be very difficult to see what one's going through and experiencing in relationship to Krishna. Otherwise, it's, you know, this person's fault and that person, it's this politics and that, and this community and that place, and, you know, this planet and this universe, and, you know, it's somehow or another everybody else's problem rather than just the material nature is not a good place to be. Does that make some sense? Like that. So that basic training, you know, just main thing is just practice for us is good. If someone's not coming through the Gurukul, but's coming into a temple, it's just good sadhana, steady sadhana, like that. Good study of the scriptures, associating with devotees very nicely, you know, being dependent upon the Lord for one's, you know, shelter and all these things. And so one may say, well, if one is able to do this, then why would one get married? The point comes is that if you can do it, that's the bottom line. Now, whether you realize that you can just continue like that, then you don't need to get married. But if that realization is not there, then one would get married. But the bottom line is someone who is just first class in the sadhana, service attitude, respective authorities, dealings with others, like that. That's the actual basic platform. That's the platform of temple life that Prabhupada was expecting. And we see, and, you know, quite in the earlier days, that was more at least understood standard that one wanted to get to. Whether it was there or not, that varied from place to place. But that was understood that that's the standard we want to get to. While if that's not there, then the temple life, there's not a whole lot to gain in the training. Like that. And then others who are the congregation won't respect much those temple devotees. Yes, my lady.
When you're talking about how when that sense of duty is not there, and the Dharma is not properly followed, then it creates great disturbance not only for the individual but also those around them. So we see from our experience that particularly some relationship or guru disciple relationship, not a disturbance. So do you see that in terms of Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan mission, there is a need for proper guru training and
sannyas
training?
Well, it's all same thing. It means if you can establish a proper brahmachari training, you can generally establish everything else. But the point is one should start from somewhere. You know, so you have to start at some point training. Because Prabhupada, quite early in the game, said, okay, now it's time to boil the milk. You know, we've made our temples, we've got devotees now. So that big initial push has been done. Now let us boil the milk. Let us train the devotees that we have. But somehow or another, that wasn't really taken to heart at that time.
I think it was even in the 60s, wasn't it?
I think it was early 70s. I think like about 73, like that. Because by that time, they had spread all over. So many of the yatras had been opened all over the world. All that, you know, so that big expansion had been done. And now it's there, now it's like train who is there. Because temple means it's an educational center. But it's not just academic. The whole thing is you can't separate the philosophy from the culture, from the actual, yeah, philosophy and culture. You can't. So that means the lifestyle, the etiquette, the dealings. You know, what is the form of the culture, means the whole, the Varnashram system, how it functions. Like devotees have tried to apply, but it's not been applied in the way of, this is the way I'm going to free myself from bondage. It's been applied, and this is the way I'm going to get what I want done, you know, either by using the power structure of the Varnashram, or something like that, or, you know, either the power structure or the financial structure of it. But it wasn't Varnashram up to date. I haven't really seen it's been approached culturally. That it's a system of how devotees can relate to each other, in general, and in specific how the individual devotee can engage his conditioned nature in the Lord's service. So until that's done, you don't really have daiva, because that's why it's daiva Varnashram, means it's engaged in the Lord's service. Like that. So therefore devotees haven't been satisfied. But that's basically because it actually hasn't been applied. Because it's a relationship. You know. I mean, can the husband just say, well, you know, I went out, got the money, brought it home, and so, you know, I don't understand why everything's not working. You know, can he go around and tell everybody, yeah, I tried this grihastha ashram, you know, it doesn't work. You know, therefore I'm just going to go back to my old boyfriend, girlfriend. I mean, you know, that's what we did as Westerners, and that was, you know, I mean, it's perfectly normal. Everybody else on the planet does it, you know. You know, it's all this weird fanatic, you know, Hare Krishna stuff, you know, the, you know, like this. You know, but the point is he never actually did it. He never was a father or a husband. Like that, because money is a side thing. The main thing is the relationship. You want to give that shelter and protection to the wife and the children, then that requires some finance. You know, so there must be some occupational duty performed, and the results of those duties will be used in this way. You know, for taking care of the family, for taking care of guests, for serving the Lord, and then what's excess, then that should be given away. So that's, finance is a secondary thing, you know. So if we put it as main, then you still don't have grihastha ashram. Because grihastha ashram means Krishna's in the center. Like that. As soon as you say that something else is in the center, it's not. Someone can say, well, so much has gone by, so many children have been disturbed, so many grihasthas have been upset. But that's basically because nobody, lock, stock, and barrel, has taken it up. You know? They just don't take it. They can say, well, this one, but Prabhupada was here for many years and he was recommending it. The devotees weren't following. To some degree they were following. But as time went, then they gave that up. So the point is one can say, well, it's all the authorities' fault, but the point is many who speak nowadays are Prabhupada's disciples. You know? And they're the ones who are leading the movement. The second next generation has only started some years back. So as far as logic goes, it doesn't make any sense. It means take the system and run it as Prabhupada said it should be run. Then one can get some, and know what one's looking for. Then one can get some results. But otherwise, if one doesn't, one can't say that the devotees have tried Varnashram and it failed. Myself, just in my study of Varnashram, what Prabhupada says, devotees haven't followed it. Some have, but the ones who are jumping up and down haven't. They haven't. Because Varnashram is not who's in charge and who's got the money. Varnashram is relationships between individuals and how they can work as a community. That's Varnashram. So there must be some ways that people can, what you can depend upon for the other. Right? And then what you are supposed to do. What are your duties? What are others' duties? How you can depend upon someone else and how you can be dependent upon by them. That makes a relationship. You have two friends. Why are they friends? Deep friends. Because they know that this person will be here in this way, and they know that if I'm in that situation, I'm going to do the same for them. Then you can call that's a deep relationship. But if the so-called friend, you know, when you really need him, is not there, you know, that's your problem. Like that. And then you do the same to them. You can't really call that deep friendship. So then one may talk about, you know, friendship and loving the neighbor, but it's the system's already there. You have to surrender. Problem is one has to surrender. Like that. One has to surrender. And that's the difficult thing. One has to have trust in the Lord. He'll take care. You know? Because that's what's happening. We may say all we want and say this and that. What's going on? It's going on. Oh, yeah, that's very good. That's a very good point. Is that aspect of if one can't be surrendered, if one can surrender, then Krishna expends his shelter. And at the same time, if one can surrender, then one will get shelter. And if one can give shelter, one will get surrender. They go together. Surrender and shelter are synonymous, basically. Just like, as a leader, someone can say, well, I was the temple president, I did my best, it all felt... But unless you can give shelter, there's no surrender by the devotees. Like that. If you give shelter and they don't surrender, then that's another thing. Then it's either we are not the one to lead, or Krishna wants to break us of certain of our attachments for leading, you know, or these persons are just totally untrained. So even though one has done the proper thing, they can't take advantage. But the shelter has to have been given. Leader means shelter. And if that means that's the whole point. Krishna is the ultimate leader, so therefore he can give ultimate shelter. But we must surrender. As we surrender, then he gives us shelter. Because everybody all over the movement, they're all eating. They all have a place to stay. You know, even if it's temporary. But it goes on. You know? It means the Pandavas in the forest, they ate. They had some place to stay. So that's all. It's just a matter of how temporary, long term. It means the longest term you can have shelter in a particular place is generally one lifetime. You know, and then that's kind of like it. Then the situation changes. And then some things may be more temporary. But it's just if we depend upon the Lord, then things work very nicely. That's for our side. We start with ourselves. And then if we're in a position to help or guide others who are doing, then we can tell others either how to guide their life, or if we have experience, how, like here, the Vanaprastha, how to tell other leaders, or if one has greater experience, how to tell other leaders how to do. So maybe a leader is not giving shelter and is giving trouble to those under him. So that must be corrected. That's wrong. But still, those who are getting the trouble, they will just see it. They have to see it in relationship to Krishna. There's no alternative. You know, one can start a movement, one can start all kinds of things, but still one won't be satisfied. You know, there's no one has been satisfied yet with pranamoy. You know, because it's still got too much passion in it. There's still passion. There's passion with some goodness, because it's doing for others, but still passion is there. It's extended sense gratification. Well, dharma, duty, it's goodness. It's basis. So therefore, it doesn't taste very good in the beginning. It's pretty boring, but it's very tasty at the end. You know, like that. So it just takes more time. Well, the other, you know, either senses or issues, they give immediate satisfaction result, but in the long run, there's dissatisfaction. So that's why it's recommended that one works on the platform of dharma and philosophy. Yes, Mataji?
At what stage would you say that a husband and wife, once they've gone through a long 25 years of marriage, and then 50 or over, to wait for some indication, like Srila Prabhupada, he was very anxious not to take sannyas, but he had all these dreams and he felt this pressure. I mean, should you wait for such a thing, or even before you move into the next stage, or is it one of those things where you should, on your own, take the instruction of just preach Krishna? You know, I mean, is it something that you should wait for, or some strong urging, or that the Vaishnava should tell you?
You know, that this is kick you out of the stage, yeah. Moving to the next thing. It would be very individual, yeah. Very individual, because all those are all elements that are there. Because one has to see one's own attachments, how they're starting to wind down. The essential point in the Vanaprastha ashram is one must be very, aware of the situation, what's going on. It's not that we just let it go and don't think about it. It's thought about, it's studied about, and these things, especially like if children, they grow up, so that gives much more time. So then it gives much more time, less finances are needed, different things are there. So then one tries to use that time more for study, preaching, associating with devotees. And then from that, naturally, that knowledge and detachment will come. So however long it takes, it doesn't really matter. But the main thing is this, the ideal is that detachment should be there. That moving into the idea is ideally one shouldn't die as a grihastha. Vanaprastha is okay, doesn't have to be sannyas, but as a grihastha it's not highly recommended. You know, unless one dies young, that's another thing. But otherwise, in old age, because the vanaprastha already means that detachment is there, that the husband and wife are working together for that detachment, for that knowledge, trying to simplify life and wind up these things. So it would be best in those things is one's study of the books, one's own increasing in sadhana and that, associating with devotees, and see them, because those who are friends, who are close, that one trusts, that has some maturity, they can give some direction, then see others before. It's a difficult now, especially, means the natural is you've seen it. As a grihastha, you're seeing the vanaprastha ashram, you're seeing these other things, but it's kind of like now is that the, you know, Prabhupada's disciples are just now coming to that stage and they're kind of on the border, and there's no real solid examples before them. So it just means it'll just take a little while to get it established, I think. But it's worth, one should move in that direction.
What if, like, he says, Srila Prabhupada established this Brahmachari Grihastha thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of our couples, they both husband and wife solemnly engage so fully in preaching and doing, I mean, through having their children living on top of the temple and living in the back of the bed, and to the point of actually neglecting their families.
Mm.
And we see now a lot of the children weren't.
Yeah.
They
well,
didn't get, they never had that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the parents are so absorbed in service and detached that they have neglected.
Mm.
So, I mean, after at what stage, if you've done that for 25 years and you had a solid dysfunctional family life for 25 years, then at what stage do you figure out that
solid?
When you're 50 and you realize you didn't really happen. Then what? Are you actually prepared? Is it something that you'll have to go through in another lifetime because you really didn't resolve?
The resolve means is one other understands that there's not something there to be gained. It means it's how you say? It's like, what is it? Historians say the only thing you learn from studying history is nobody learns from studying history.
Right. Yeah.
So when one learns that the benefit of grihastha ashram is that there is no specific benefit of grihastha ashram, means on its own. The benefit is that one has gone through the motions, one has done the duties, one has experienced the relationships, and then one sees that that's not actually what is giving, what the taste. Before marriage, one thinks that those things are going to give a certain kind of satisfaction. Then one finds that one's done that, one's got the satisfaction one thought one would get, but that isn't the real satisfaction. The real satisfaction is that one did it for Krishna, and that one is working together with other devotees of Krishna to do service for Krishna. So it's actually the satsang, and these are the real tastes. So that naturally then takes one on to the vanaprastha, because in vanaprastha you just increase those things like that, but still within the family atmosphere. Vanaprastha doesn't mean that one, that husband and wife don't stay together or don't. It just generally means that their service in that starts to take the prominence and all that. So then in the, how do you say, it's also understanding, because Prabhupada gave so much indication of what was going on in the family and what was going on with children and all that, is that even one, you know, would have found one situation, you know, living in the temple or living in the back of a van or that, those relationships could still work in that way. One may not have the, how you say, the The standard paraphernalia of, you know, steady house or steady this or that. But the relationship can go on anywhere. Like you see people in Calcutta, they live, you know, under a plastic sheet. Yeah, it's the attitude. So basically what's happened, it's not the externals that went wrong, really. It was the attitude was not fully, it's just due to the lack of maturity. And, you know, I guess as you know, what is it? Having not been born in devotee families, then we, how you say, experience these difficulties, you know, because we didn't somehow or another, due to either lack of Krishna consciousness or not enough of it, didn't take birth in a situation where we would have, you know, experienced these things in a more pleasant way. But because the living entity has choice at every moment, then they can learn from that and move on, you know. So whatever, there's no inauspiciousness in Krishna consciousness, because everything can be used in Krishna's service.
It's not like you have to, you know, hash it all out before, say, the husband and wife go to a sannyasa separation or, you know, glorified divorce or whatever they're going to do there.
Yeah.
That you're going to have to take birth again because...
No. It's...
You know, like Prabhupada felt that he didn't get his daughter married and there were certain things he didn't finish.
Yeah.
You know, that you have to do, wrap it up in a...
You never really finish. That's the thing is, ultimately one understands is there's no pleasant way to say goodbye to Maya.
It's awkward.
It's always awkward. But the main thing is that one has got the realization that it's not worth going through again. If one thinks, well, one wouldn't mind going through it again, then there's every possibility that that would be, take birth again to go through it. Now maybe even in a better way. But when one realizes that, yes, this is what the scriptures mean, and that there isn't nothing there, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much facility and money and family you have, still you have to face death alone. You know, you're still going to be, it's you and the holy name. Then it's been successful, even if it's been wild, you know. But... It's how you say, it's like if the disease is very light, then, you know, nice Sattvic herbal medicines work. If it's a little heavier, one may use more passionate minerals and all these metals and all these things. And if it's really, you know, acute or chronic, one may have to use poisons, you know, different combinations of herbs and chemicals that create, it's a poison, but it has medicinal effect. So if our attachments or our, how you say, are very heavy in certain ways, so sometimes a very rough treatment does the work, you know. So that's not, but if one at the end of the day, one's gone through all that and one has that realization, it's been worthwhile. It's whatever there's been time and the insanity and the obstacles, they've all helped us come to the realization that we have to surrender to Krishna, and that's it. The holy name and the association of devotees and hearing Bhagavatam and worshipping the Lord and staying in the Dham, that's actually the real substance. Then there's no harm. One can look back that it was actually a beneficial experience. But if one is still yearning for, you know, those sweet words and the, you know, the babblings of the children and all the things that the Bhagavatam talks about that catch the attention of the Grihamedi, then that's a difficulty. Then that means that these haven't been worked out, and there may be a very, very, one has to get those ironed out. So either by some good sadhana, strong association, or by just somehow or another continuing in the ashram until one can work those things out. As you see, sometimes we do have, you know, God brothers, God sisters, that they find themselves at that stage in life, but they're just so frustrated, but they're not, they haven't been able to move it on philosophically and come to realization. And they really sincerely feel the need to, you know, start all over again. And, you know, either in the present family they're in, or that breaks up, falls apart, and becomes unviable, and they have to start a new family. But it's not ideal, but at least then, if they're in knowledge, then they can make the best of it. If it's still just an emotional thing, it's very dangerous. because then a next life is quite inevitable. But if one goes into that knowing, okay, I really blew it before, and this is what it is, and this is how it's supposed to work, and one tries to work that nicely, then it's not ideal at all. But because then one can get too old to really be able to get out easily. You know, physically one can't move around, and while one still has some strength and everything, one should be able to get out, do something. You know, either, you know, whatever it is, even if it's in the house, as Vanaprastha, but in the house, in the temple, out, something. Something has to be done where one gets out. That's the whole thing in the Vanaprastha, they generally go out.
Out of the house.
Yeah, out of the house. Even if it's husband and wife going out of the house. But it's out of kind of like what they call, the, you know, the wonderful little house situation. That, yeah, means... Yeah, it means that it's not that it becomes unbearable, the austere. It just means that it's not overly comfortable, you know. One moves, one goes, one or creates a situation in which that can be done wherever one is, or even in one's own house, just simplify. Whatever is easiest. Generally, it's hard to, you know, when you have a house full of stuff, it's hard to kind of like simplify it down. It's easier to kind of move out of that, leave that to the kids and go to a simpler situation. And just start over like that. And then husband and wife can work that out. And then if it's seen that the sannyasa and that is an ideal thing, then one can move into that. And if not, then one can continue as vanaprastha. It just depends on the individual very much. Because the real sannyasa is engaging one's activities in the Lord's service without desire for the result. That's explained in the 18th chapter. That's actual sannyasa. Because sannyasa means giving up that work that creates fruit. So normally that's externally done by not doing anything that creates anything. But the internal meaning is that whatever you do, whatever situation you're in, that is done for Krishna and the result is Krishna's. So that's actually sannyasa. So even in brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha life, then that still can be, one can be sannyasa by mentality. And that is actually the purpose of the Daivavarnashram. That's the thrust of it. So technically everybody's sannyasis. Therefore, when Prabhupada was present and everybody was kind of acting like that, it was actually a proper, though it wasn't mature or fully understood, but that was actually the form of the actual Daivavarnashram. Though the relationships and the responsibilities and all that hadn't been fully understood or practiced. But that thing where one's completely detached, because there was a taste coming in those days. But problem is I would say it wasn't so much that was done, is that that didn't continue. And so at one point it was, we didn't find ourselves in a, you know, what we call a typical grihastha situation. And but at the same time, we weren't working on that still, that drive of the preaching and all those things, but just maturing it so we understand is that, okay, we're preaching, but we still spend time with the family and this and that and engage them and, you know, somehow or another try to create that family atmosphere, even though it may be very much in a brahminical atmosphere, you know, because it wasn't that those things weren't going on before. Brahmins, they'd live in a simple grass hut. They didn't have much. You know, if they'd husband many times would be off doing some yajna somewhere, this and be gone for time. Because sometimes these yajnas would take months or years. So it means, you know, these things were gone. So many times you have that. Rishi Sringa? His father was off doing some yajna somewhere, you know, long enough for the, whatever that king was, to send his agents to collect him. And then Shakuntala? That whole thing there is what's his name? Vishwamitra, he was out doing something and she was taking care of the ashram. So it's not that there's not going to be these things. That's just brahminical life. Yeah. Also in the Kshatriya life, you know, many times the king has to go out for different duties in the kingdom, or sometimes there's a war. So time will be spent out, and sometimes a long time. You know, sometimes a war can go on for years. Like that, for business, many times a businessman may have to go and travel and go to other far parts of the country. Like that, generally, Shudra, they would generally be in the place. They wouldn't have so much they wouldn't be moving around. Generally, what they're doing is localized, and they're working for somebody. They're generally under somebody, so they don't, that independence is not needed because they're working for somebody. The businessman, he has to make money, so he has to go get it wherever it is. If it's in his own place or if it's in another city or another country, he has to get it. But the Shudra works for the Vaishya. He's already getting the money, so his situation is more secure. So that kind of, so those aspects of separation are always going to be there. But it's just a matter of the atmosphere. So Prabhupada set it up, basically he was trying to establish a class of Brahmins. And so it was there, but just due to the, you know, impersonal Western background, you don't really know how to deeply relate with other people. And therefore, in that times that were spent together, you know, not much satisfaction was gained, you know, like that. But it's one has to be, it's very important that one doesn't look back and feel that something went wrong there or that Prabhupada was wrong in that. He was giving us all the things to do, but we were not at the time able to take it, you know. And then those who couldn't live like that, who had difficulties, then they can do other things. One doesn't have to necessarily live in that preaching mode. That's specifically for the Brahmins. Like that. Otherwise, one can settle, manage some place, or set up business, or, you know, just do something that someone else wants you to do. Like that. And one finds that little bit more of, you know, less, you know, more whatever kind of security in that way. But for the Brahmins, their need of security is much less. They need some. You always need. If the body's there, some security needs to be there for it. The senses have to be engaged. It's just a matter of the knowledge and detachment and what level that's at the time. Does that make any sense? Well,
from what you're saying about relationships tonight, it seems like the essence of Vedic relationships is that it instills and maintains and increases one's faith.
Yeah.
That's the essence.
Yeah, faith is... Everything starts from faith. That's why the whole devotional process starts with faith. Though we also understand that faith has come from devotees. But when the faith is there, when the faith increases, one takes up sadhusanga. When the faith increases more, then one takes up bhajana kriya. When it increases more, then one takes it very seriously to detach oneself from the material nature and try to attach oneself to Krishna so anartha navrichi comes. When faith is more, then there's nishta. Faith is more ruchi. So faith is always, it's the essential. It's based on the faith. You know, so that faith matures into prema. So it's all, because one sees, one studies the shastra, one sees the shastra says these are the difficulties in the material world. Then one gets married, one deals in the material world, one sees, oh, this is what the scripture was talking about. So then now one realizes that aspect, and it increases one's faith. So now maybe you have, okay, you realized one, you have 99 more to go. And then as you go through and, oh, this is what it's talking about when it's the forest of enjoyment saying that you get bewildered by the sounds of the young kids and their voices and all that kind of thing. Is that, it means not that we'll deal with the kids. And it's a side thing, then they talk very nicely and they sound very sweet. But that's not the main reason for dealing with the kids. The Griha Maiti, that's the reason that they're dealing with it. For the devotee, that's a side thing. It's like for the devotee, he honors prasad. He cooks nicely for Krishna, and he honors prasad. And it's a side thing, then when the stomach is satisfied, it gets filled, and the tongue is very satisfied because it was very nice things that were offered to Krishna. But one doesn't cook just to cook nice things and then offer that to Krishna. So that's okay. But it's substandard. And then worse is when one just cooks because one just wants to eat. You know, and then afterwards someone says, hey, did you offer it? Oh, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, they're fanatics, you know, like this kind of thing, you know. So that's Griha Maiti. It's just a simple thing in the consciousness. So therefore the Bhagavatam gives all those things because these are the pitfalls that are going to be there in going through the ashram. That's why so much is given on what to do, what not to do. It's not going to come, it's not going to just come like that. You know, the euphoria, you know, before marriage makes it look like it's just everything's just going to go through very wonderfully. But the thing is, the reality is that no, you have to at every step make the decision. Make the decision to engage yourself in this way, make your decision to do in this way. And then that creates the relationship. Then that creates and then one because of that the faith is there. The faith is there. And one sees that yes, the holy name is the central feature. And the whole idea of marriage and all that and vanapras, brahmacharya, all the whole varnashram system is only because I have a conditioned nature and I'm engaging it. And so I engage it according to the shastra and I'm satisfied. But the real satisfaction is not that. The real satisfaction is chanting the holy name. And so that as the faith, that increases the faith and one deepens like that. It means if by following the varnashram it doesn't increase the faith in the holy name, then there's something wrong. Like that. General thing is to throw it out. Or, you know, and just get into the holy name. Or just, you know, throw them both out. You know. But the varnashram is a step to help us develop our faith in the chanting. Like that. Because we should be chanting 24 hours a day. But we're distracted because of our conditioned nature. So then we look and we engage our conditioned nature according according to our conditioned nature, we engage that in the Lord's service. Sometimes you just dip your finger in the oil and then touch higher up on the wick. It's come now, but you can do that, you know? You just dip down there and touch there.
Yeah.
And then that'll... So the whole, how do you say? Like that. Means, even in this discussion, the whole discussion shouldn't emphasize so much the emotional platform. Like that, how Prabhupada presents it, that's the proper balance. Where the emphasis is on the philosophical. And then the emotional and sensual are automatically engaged. He gives the system of Dharma how these senses will be engaged. You know? Like that. And how the senses will be engaged. But the problem is, why just in the presentation I always emphasize that kind of overly. It's not because it's more important than the others. It's because I've just seen in study of it that has been the most commonly missed point of the whole system. Is the devotees took the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and engaged basically their senses, you know, fundamentally in Krishna's service. They didn't engage their emotions. And the only way to do that is through varnashram. And devotees generally just sideline it. You know, they use the method of, you cut, what are you saying? You sharpen the knife on the tree and then cut the tree to test it. So they read Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada's talking about, you know, karma and jnana and throwing that out and then talking about varnashram and then devotees take that point, oh, we know, we don't care for this varnashram and throw it out. But Prabhupada is given. Prabhupada's already thrown out an ocean of the varnashram we don't need, non-devotional varnashram, and kept what is useful for devotees in devotional service. But devotees then use Prabhupada's instructions on Prabhupada and throw out, and then afterwards, because it didn't work, then they blame Prabhupada. A very, very nice system, you know, if one wants to stay in the material world. But they missed that point, because Prabhupada tells what are the relationships between husband and wife, the parents and child, the child and the teachers, you know, devotees and the leaders and how, what is their attitude, the Brahmins, the saintly persons, you know, what everybody's individual duty as a devotee is, ultimate duty is, you know, all these, he's described all this in the books. I mean, basically as we go through, I haven't come across anything of any that's really a main point that Prabhupada hasn't already mentioned. You know, some of the little details he's also mentioned. Some of them that don't apply to devotees he hasn't mentioned. Or generally he has mentioned in general that we don't follow this particular aspect. Like as devotees we don't get overly worried about shraddhas. So the 20 pages of, you know, who you can invite to eat at a shraddha doesn't apply to us. You know, we just have our simple thing and bring some devotees and feed them and bus, finished. Like that. So that 30 pages we don't need. But Prabhupada mentions, you know, we have our own system, but we don't get into all the details for materialists, the materialistic follower of the Varnashram. So Daiva Varnashram means the devotional follower, the one who, the devotee who has a conditioned nature and wants to engage that conditioned nature in Lord, in Krishna's service according to his directions in the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore then uses it as a tool to come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And to enhance his chanting. The mind is not disturbed. You know? The mind's not disturbed. It's fixed. But faith is, that's the essential point. Faith, relationship, like that, that whole. Because Prabhupada says knowledge, the second chapter of Gita says knowledge is understanding matter and spirit and the relationship of both. You know, or the Supreme Lord, the living entity in the material world, and then what's the relationship? So relationship is knowledge. So the knowledge that's given is so that we understand that relationship here and with Krishna. So we know how to engage the material nature in Krishna's service, which includes the body. And we know how to, you know, engage ourself, our consciousness in Krishna's service. So that's the whole. Yeah. That.
Yes. When it comes to deciding what sort of occupation to take up or whether to enter Grihastha Ashram, for example, when there's the guru who's giving advice, how much does he tell the student what they should do and how much does he try to get them to realize for themselves what they should do?
Both have to be there. Both aspects have to be there. Because the thing is one has to accept it. So one can only accept it if one understands it. So generally it would be like that. Because the fine details aren't. The general direction, that's enough. Like, let's say if someone has a business nature, the guru is not, he has to say, well, you know, maybe you should get into steel or, you know, or into, you know, cloth. No, that's, it's just, he lets one, he basically points out so you understand what is the nature. Because, you know, because it can be done quite simply. But it's, in any case, the training for anyone, whether one does according to the occupation of a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, or a Vaishya, the training's the same, you know. And the principles of training will also be the same for the Shudra, just that it will be done in the house instead of in the Gurukul. The Gurukul means that it becomes much more conscious, like that, and more on the platform of knowledge. Well, if it's done totally just in the house, then it has a tendency to be a little bit more sentiment. Though the same principles have to get across. You'll see the, you know, you go nice people, you, nice Indians, they're Shudras, you know, they work for somebody, they have a job, their children are nicely behaved, gentle, and you know, all these things. It's the principles they get across, but it's just, it's the depth to what you can get it across is more difficult, because it's understood as that the dwijas, they're going to be more the leaders of the society, like that. Though they're also following, everybody's following, but they're specifically in general going to be more leaders. Well, Shudra means he's just going to be basically following, you know. But one leads in one's own family, that's there, but it's just one's sphere is a little smaller. So the principles will be learned in the family. While for the others, you have to be able to move, have influence more on the bigger, the whole community or whole society or like that. So then that takes that the understanding must be more conscious, and that's gained by going to the school. Because then in the house, mother tells you so many things. You know, one takes them, but doesn't always take them seriously, not until much later in life. That's the problem, is that mother tells all kinds of nice things from as soon as you can, you know, understand what she's talking about, you know, from around 2 years old, you know. I mean, she's been giving before that, you start to understand it. But it's generally not until you're 16, 18, 20 that you start to actually understand what she's talking about. So that means is that one's gained that, but basically one's gained it for oneself only. So the idea is you go to the Gurukul, and as soon as you go to the Gurukul, then those instructions you start to understand. So you already have, you know, 10-15 year head start on that. So then by the time one comes to that age, then one is much more mature in these things, and now one can give that to others. Like that, you know. Does that make some sense? So guru should help, but it's mainly just to understand the conditioned nature and how to work within that.
Like that. Sometimes a student might just have some other idea about who they are or what they are.
Then it's left, because then you have the principle. The whole point is it's still there, because husband and wife are like guru and disciple. So the same principle is there with Shiva and Sati. Okay, then do it. And then if it doesn't work, then they're there. You know, it means when Sati's ideas didn't work out, Shiva was there. You know. Means wrong had been done, he took care of the wrong. And then he waited until she appeared again, you know, to continue the relationship. So the whole point is it's just there. Is that okay? So then instruction has been given, now you use it, you work it. And then whenever you come to the point you have some realization, then we're here waiting. You can come back, we can discuss more. But if not, so that's the whole point, is the naistika can always just go on just by hearing. You can just hear it and absorb it and apply it. You know? Well, generally the point for the upakurvana, there comes a point he has to go out and do it. Though the relationship may be very tight, it doesn't necessarily have to be that there's some disturbance in the relationship. Just that he has to go out and do those things. You know? Does that make some sense? It means on his own he has that feeling to go out. Well, the naistika can either stay there in the ashram or be sent out. You know, he does nicely in the ashram, now you go out and train others. Like that. So it's just slightly different in the mood. Because of the total dependence on the higher authority, they have, greater dependence, they have greater independence. And then the upakurvana, because there's a little bit more independence, then he has more dependence, and he has less independence. Because grihasthas, one is more independent in certain ways, but in other ways one's not. One can't just go and do anything. One has a family. One has to take care. Like that. So the brahmachari in that way is more free. You know? But at the same time, as he's completely under the direction of whoever his authorities are. Like that. So it's a very interesting balance. The tendency is that there's two things working at once. The Western the Western concept is you take one of them. Whichever one you want. I like this one, I take that one, or I don't like the whole system, so I take the bad side and put that in the front. And then it makes a nice little box, because little boxes work if you can put one thing or a couple of things in the box and that's all that's in the box. But if you put two contradictory things in the same box, then it's hard to understand. So that's what culture is. Contradictory things are happening. The grihastha is independent, but he's dependent. He's not independent because he has his family. Like that. You know, so is there. The brahmachari is he doesn't have any of those responsibilities. He's independent from the material world, but he's dependent upon his authorities. Like that. So like that you'll find in everything's like that. You know? You know, the wife is subservient to the husband, but at the same time is in the house, she's the boss. You know, where you put the table and the vase and what flowers go in it, that's what she says. You know, he doesn't say that. You know, unless the guy's, you know, Salvador Dali or something. You know, but then, you know. You know. But whatever it is then, but otherwise, it's just, so there's always these things like that. It means the mother is in charge of the child, but everything she does is completely for service to the child. So she's serving the child, but she's doing it in the mood of the authority. So you have, that's the thing of culture. That's why it's very hard, in one sense, for the modern culture to understand, because modern culture doesn't somehow or another can't accommodate these dualities, you know? that seeming differences that are there. Therefore, the Vedic literature, even when it deals with this area, it's like, understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is pretty straightforward. You know, Krishna is God, I'm his servant, then my duty is to develop pure love for him, and the process to do that is by chanting the holy name. You know, Prabhupada had these early hippies in San Francisco. They hadn't even seen Prabhupada. They're already speaking this and have faith in this. And they all still have their beards and their hair and still go to the next door to the donut shop and all that stuff. But the fundamentals of philosophy they've already gained, because it's more straightforward in this way. But then when you get down into the dealing with the conditioned nature of the living entity, then you end up with all these strange contradictions. So you have to have a book, you know, this fat to just tell you how to run it. Because you have to deal with all these contradictions. And that, unless one understands that, then it's difficult. You know? Is that okay?
There's one other thing which is kind of related to it as well. That I know that previously gurus used to advise, oh, you should marry and you shouldn't marry and so on. But then they got so much flack afterwards when those marriages didn't work out, then the disciples turned around and blamed the guru for their marriage not working and so on. So nowadays, a lot of them just...
They do their own thing. The marriages still don't work, but at least they have the satisfaction there's no one else to blame, except the partner. That always remains. It's always... You'll always find someone else. You know, like that is these things is just a matter of, because there is that aspect is someone knows and gives these directions. We see it in Chaitanya Lila going on all the time, is that guru would give recommendation for getting married or not, and that, because knows the thing. But the point is one doesn't have to get involved in necessarily in who one marries. That's the thing, is that one has to know the psychology very well to be able to do that, you know. And then there's the individual, how much they understand, how much they can apply, you know. Because many times it's just that, many times it may not be a good match. At the same time, as many times it's just neither party follow nicely. So then they get experience from that, what worked and what didn't work. And then after they get married again or... And you know, something, you know, once or twice more, and then it starts to work. So then they'll say, see, I made my own arrangement at work. But it actually is just they've gotten the experience. They've known how to become more, you know, give and take and all those kind of things like that. You know, they learn, you know, learn how to take care, how to be more conscious and take care of the other person better. While many times they didn't know that in the beginning. There's somehow this idea is that it'll just work out perfectly. You know, the other person will just do everything wonderfully. So it's very better not to look at it in that light, because one will never get the answer. One can't get the answer. Because who is wrong? Because ultimately it goes back to we're wrong for being here in the first place. You know, if we were such wonderful persons that deserve everything perfect, then why we're not in the spiritual world? You know, we were there, we had a place, and then we decided that, well, why Krishna should be the only one getting all the attention? And so now we get the attention, you know, like that. So that's ultimately goes back to there. So that's the ornament of the devotee, is that humility. Because like that. Because it's only the conditioned nature that makes it difficult to make the marriage work. One gets married because of the conditioned nature, but it's the conditioned nature itself that makes it difficult. Therefore, you try to match them. If one is more Krishna conscious and less affected by the conditioned nature, then one can work practically any situation. You know, one's on the Brahma Buddha platform, it doesn't matter. Because there is no material conditioning. You know, if one's a Madhyam, then one can work in a much broader Kanista then has one has to be very careful about the conditionings. They're very exactly matched, like that. So the point is if we say it didn't work, then we also have to, in saying that, acknowledge that that there's a good chance that we weren't anything above Kanista. So because of that, we're so absorbed in Sakam Bhakti Yoga. And because of that, just our nature and the other person's nature didn't get along. But then now, if that's purely the guru's fault, or if it's a matter of training, we can say, well, guru didn't train us. But then many times it's maybe they are, maybe we didn't see. So I read for this group, no? I've read it a few times. The qualifications of disciple. Like devotees always talk about the qualifications of guru. You know, and always set, you know, very high standards. But the same scriptures that set that standard also set the standard for disciple. And then if one doesn't have those, technically one shouldn't be initiated. You know? That's the standard. And so if one does, then one runs the risk of the offense of preaching to the faithless. Because in preaching to the faithless is take on unqualified disciples. Because then one takes on all the disqualification, one can fall from that position. I went through this. Yeah.
I was asking about this because he was taking on so many disciples. He said that was actually an instruction of Prabhupada. It's not a matter of pick and choose from the ISKCON standard, but if they were following nicely for 6 months, I recommended then it was his duty to initiate them.
Yeah. No, that's there. But then one. It says Prabhupada's the general instruction is that someone should be sincere. So then the difficulty comes is that many times is the spiritual master has to rely upon the local authority that they say the person's sincere. And then so which in many cases is true, and in some cases it's not. You know, just the devotee is bothering them a lot, or they need some new pujaris, or need a cook, or like that, so then they recommend. You know, so many times the spiritual master doesn't even have the opportunity to really know who the disciple is. So then so that trust is there. The same time as then we see in the whole though the recommendation is coming from the local authorities, somehow they're in the whole process. The local authorities are getting no responsibility in the whole failing of the system. It's 100% fault problem of the guru. The guru had to deal with people that were recommended by that local authority, because the local authority is the one who is, you know, making them devotees, training them. But if they just trained them up to the point, you know, 2 month bhakti program, that's it. It makes it very hard that one can put the full blame fully on the guru. Because it should be that, because Prabhupada mentions that they, you know, like he was trying to get established Bhakti Shastri. When he finished Bhakti Shastri, then only you could get second initiation. You know, it's like you studied the Panchara, you just studied the deity worship handbook, that you understood deity worship and its system, and you studied the Bhakti Shastri and passed that, then you were qualified for second. Because at second is where the real reactions and real responsibility comes. At first, it's not as strong. So that gives you time. But any temple presidents push that? No, they're either doing nice preaching or maintaining the temple or getting involved in you know, building a bigger temple with more altars than the next temple. You know, so many temples you go to, you can find that some of them are going nicely. Nice brahminical kind of atmosphere and training, and some it's just the new devotees, they just got to go out and pick it to the bone and bring it home to daddy, you know. And when they burn out, then they weren't sincere. But funny thing was, is then the temple president is the one that said they were sincere before and the guru took them on. And now the temple president just said, ah, well, they were not sincere, and rejects them. You know, so in the whole equation, that's what I was mentioning before, we can take an issue, but you can't solve anything by issues, because issues aren't complete. Because they don't deal with the full picture. Because the whole thing is if you want to deal, you have to deal with leaders. And then in leaders, you have temple presidents, you have regional secretaries, you have sannyasis, you have GBC. You know, you have leaders, senior devotees in the community. You know, and then when you get down to the family level, then you have the father, and then the mother, the teachers, like this. So it's a much broader. So unless it's dealt with on that level, you can't solve it, because you don't have community. Unless you solve all, unless you deal with all that, you don't have community. So Prabhupada dealt with all that. Like that. And the whole thrust of all that is not economic development, but is chanting the holy name. And if that's done, economic development's there. The amount of money that we had in the 80s was phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean, we're beggars compared to that then. You know? But the individual's facility is way more than it was then. Way more than what it was then. A brahmachari now has more facility than a grihastha had in Prabhupada's day here in Mayapur. And the brahmacharis in those days, so we shouldn't even talk about it. Yeah. So but in those days, so much money was there, so much facilities, this and that. So because the preaching was going on, and because surrender to the mission and that single-pointed drive was there, then Dharma was being accomplished. Artha was automatically there. You know, Prashad was nice, the facilities were nice, so Kama was there. Everything was there. But somehow or another, there's an idea now is that mechanically, through the means of management and sociology, we're going to create Artha. It's a fallacy. It'll never happen. You can look at, the Mormons, you can look at the Amish, you can look at, any Oroville, anything you want. Somebody has money because in the past they've done Dharma, thus. No one makes money from not having done it. Even someone who uses adharma, still they had the karma to get that money. Otherwise, there's many people who go out and rob a bank, but get caught. And then there's someone who robs a bank and doesn't get caught. So it's only because of previous karma that they got that money. But because they've done it also, they've applied it through adharmic means, they're going to have heavy reactions for that. But from dharma comes artha, bus. That's just the way it goes, It's like from fire comes cooking. One can say, we're not bothered with the fire, we'll just stick all the sabji in the pot and just push it around, It's not going to work. So unless varnashram is followed, you're not going to get artha. Yeah. He should be devoted to the lotus feet of the spiritual master. This is Sanat Goswami on Bona Fide Disciple. He should be fully capable of upholding the vows made to the spiritual master. He should be engaged day and night in the Lord's service with body, mind, and words. He should be desirous of knowing the absolute truth. He should be spotless in character, truthful, gentle, and polite, pleasing in appearance and intelligence. He should show proper respect to elders, to initiated Vaishnavas, and to the Lord. He should observe silence concerning material subjects and should have control of his senses. He should have no attraction for committing sinful activities. So these are the qualities he should have. Like that. So that is the qualities that someone who becomes the disciple of the Maha Uttam Bhagavat that, dropped out of the Nitya Lila, then this is the kind of disciple. So then the bona fide disciple should not possess the following characters. So these are the ones he should not have. He should not be lazy, dirty, sickly, continually afflicted or lamenting, angry, proud, lusty, or coveting material desires. should not show the enjoying mood, should not indulge in sinful activities such as taking meat, intoxication, gambling, or illicit sex. Strange, Sanatana Goswami should mention that. He should not earn a living by unjust means. He should not use vulgar or coarse language, should not be critical of others, should not be miserly, malicious, devious, or envious, should not give pain to others or be addicted to cruel activities, should not be ignorant, nor should he be proud of material learning, should not indulge in non-Vaishnava philosophies. He should not be addicted to overeating. And then these are the following etiquettes that one should follow. Like that. Oh, in relation to the spiritual master. He should fall down like an uprooted tree, dandapat, on seeing the spiritual master. When the spiritual master approaches, he should face him, and when he leaves, he should follow him. He should not leave the spiritual master's presence without asking permission. He should not utter the spiritual master's name inattentively, but always with respect. He should not imitate the gait, activities, or voice of the spiritual master. He should always hold the spiritual master's words in great respect. Though he may be punished by the spiritual master, he should not take it unkindly. He should not bear to hear criticism of the spiritual master, the scriptures, or the Lord, but should leave the place immediately. He should not step on the spiritual master's garland, bed, shoes, asan, shadow, or eating table. He should not spread his legs before the spiritual master, nor should he yawn, laugh, or make disrespectful noises before him. He should not sit on an asan or bed before the spiritual master. He should not worship others in preference to the spiritual master. He should not give diksha initiation, give scriptural explanations, or show superiority in front of the spiritual master. Should not give orders to the spiritual master, but always obey them, him. He should treat the spiritual master with similar respect. He should treat the wife, son, and relatives of the spiritual master as the spiritual master, but he should not clean the body of the son, take his remnants, or wash his feet. So that is on the, you know, that's given on the platform from the Pancharatra. So we can see that these elements then all come down into more detail in the Vedic, because the Pancharatra is the essence of the Veda, and the Bhagavat is the essence of everything. That's the completely pure application of the whole. Of philosophy and its application.
So we should understand from this Maharaj that there's culture from both the point of view of the guru and of the disciple, and that even if the guru is in a difficult position, the guru has responsibility of maintaining a proper cultural attitude.
Yeah, that's there. Or at least if the guru is not, and he's not in a position to, you know, be, how you say, involved in any of the activities, then the disciple maintains a proper attitude. Because the point is that one has gained benefit. You know, one may, and that benefit has come by instruction, an example. So instructions, valuable instructions that are, you know, supported by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, those remain. But at the present situation, then one finds one can't continue that Sadhu Sangha. So the point of the essential point of initiation is Sadhu Sangha. So one must take advantage of the association of other devotees. Then that maintains one's initiation. That's the life of the initiation. Like that. So that aspect is there. But that doesn't mean that one throws everything to the side. Like that. That's too easy, too cheap. You know, just like when Achyutananda went away, then, you know, up to that day, everyone, you know, whatever he said or listened to his kirtans or tapes, but as soon as the day left, bang, that's it, they all got thrown out the window. You know, Vishnu Jan, the same thing, out the window. But point is so many things of value are there, they've done, you know, like that. So is that, you know, so it means like, what's his name? George Harrison wasn't, you know, I don't know now, but so many years wasn't, you know, really working with devotees or hear much of them, and kind of like out there in the ozone. So does that mean we throw out the Krishna book because he, you know, he published it? You know, so it's like it's not a strong situation. The point is what's been gained is gained, and what if one can't gain more, then that's it. You know. Does that make some sense? Or, yeah. So in other words, there's plenty to learn, you know, from what we've done in the past and how to apply it. Anything else that I was in for? It's getting late. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jayanita Gauri Premanandi.